CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives for today. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers, and our producer, Lee Cantor, will introduce our sponsors.
Today, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management, consulting services, and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% clients describe Delaney's as outstanding and excellent. And also, SAP Business by Design, a fully integrated business management software solution designed for small to mid-sized companies that want the benefits of large-scale business applications without the need for a large IT infrastructure.
And today we have a news item. We've heard about BP and some world disasters. Draw your attention to an item in CFO Magazine earlier in the year, which stated, and this is a word to the wise for all you CFOs out there, it stated that 80% of CFOs believe that fraud and theft from their employee base will increase in 2010. We are a little bit beyond halfway through the year. Make sure you're watching the small details, looking at the cash, looking at the bank account, and watching all those accruals and reserves. Well, today we have Jeff Questenberry joining us to discuss the role of the CFO. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thank you, Lorraine. I'm glad to be here.
You are currently the CFO, Chief Financial Officer with the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta. This is a large 17,000-member nonprofit located in the Metro Atlanta area. Previously, you've served in a couple of very interesting roles. You were a CFO County Manager for Forsyth County until very recently, one of the fastest-growing counties in the United States. And prior to that, you were overseeing the financial services for CARE, one of the world's largest nonprofits, and you have a combined 25 plus years of management experience. So, Jeff, with all of that said, tell us a little bit about your background, what led you to being where you are today, a little bit of history of Jeff, and why you chose the CFO path.
It's been an interesting trip for me, I have to admit. I started out in the for-profit world, working for such companies as GE, North American Phillips, and at that time, North Carolina National Bank, which is now known as Bank America. During that time period, I also did a short stint with the Small Business Administration under what's now known as FEMA, disaster program, and worked in Mobile during when Hurricane Frederick hit in the early, late 70s. And what I came to find over that time period, I was looking for something that I wanted a passion. I liked the finance world, but I liked doing a job where I gave back to people. And the year that I spent with FEMA, I was working with individuals that had lost their homes, their businesses, and I come to realize that that was something I liked doing. But over the long term, what I was doing with these three organizations was I was doing financial analysis, auditing, and learned how to run a small company. It turned out I was given the opportunity by a coworker to become CFO of a small nonprofit, about $2 million in size, here in Atlanta. And I think that was the start of my career, or trip, as I refer to it sometimes. And since that time, I've worked for quite a few different nonprofits, but I think I've found a niche that I like. It gives me the opportunity to earn some funds for my family, but also gives me the opportunity to go home at the end of the day and show that I gave something back to the community and the people that needed help.
That's fabulous. And as we talk, I would imagine we're going to get into a lot of discussion about nonprofits, the world of nonprofits. Maybe let's kickstart that off. What is the difference, the primary differences that you have found in being the CFO of a for-profit versus a nonprofit?
I think the primary difference, and I've seen it with some of the nonprofits I've had, is you're dealing with a mission. You've got a goal that you're trying to achieve. It's not always making widgets or producing a product. It's doing for something for somebody that needs help, that at the end of the day that you can see that you've done something that can make their lives easier for them. I mean, in one of my organizations, CARE, an international relief organization, we dealt with 52 countries, and we had people that lived on a day-to-day basis on $1 or less. And we accomplished there such things as creating women's banking and food programs, but also taught them to grow their own crops and expand in those areas. So I think the nonprofit world is different because you're not always looking to make that dollar at the end of the day. And sometimes you're actually taking a challenge that you're going to spend dollars you don't have, and you have to have the confidence that those dollars are going to come in from people that believe strongly in helping other people around the world.
Is that through commitments from prospect donors or grants or government agencies?
It's a combination of those things. We actually, and most nonprofits now, receive funding not only from our government, the federal dollars, they receive from state, counties, cities, but also there are a tremendous group of foundations located across the United States that will be looking for nonprofits and determining if something that they want to donate money to that can help somebody else. But individuals do a tremendous amount of donating in the United States. And the United States is one of the largest donors in the world from individuals, even in this downturn in the market. And so that combination of things, you hope you have enough diversity that you can ensure that you are able to fund your programs even during this an economy like we have these days.
So taking that one step further, the CFO's role today, we talk on the show about having some element of broad reach across the organization. Often it is getting into areas of operations. The customer, instead of being somebody that's buying services or widgets, as we described, is that a case of you connecting with federal agencies and individual high net worth perhaps donors? Is it a different connect for you?
It's totally different in the nonprofit world. You don't just make the financials. You have to talk to individual donors. You have to have contacts with the federal government, and you have to know individuals that are experts in those areas to help you out. So you have to start establishing that base of individuals. But operation-wise, you have to understand that area as well as you do the finance area, because if you understand that, you can work better with your other senior staff. And in the nonprofit world, you have a lot of people who may have spent their entire life working in these areas, but they don't have a lot of financial background. So you have to help them to understand that there's a value of finance, particularly these days when people are being looked at a lot more closely, but also ensure that you know what they're trying to do and help them to accomplish that at the same time.
Does that create a different challenge for the CFO? People talk about us as being not necessarily having the most strong emotional or outgoing sides, and I see you smiling. The audience can't see that. But at the same time, how do you create that succession planning? Is it a case of helping people to nurture those spoken elements of their job and those nurturing aspects?
Oh, that's you're right in line there, because a lot of times they'll say the CFOs don't smile. Is we have a tendency to frown a lot because we're taking numbers in our heads and defining those down. But, I mean, this is a business where you have to be able to connect with other people and have to be able to see what's being accomplished. I think the role in the nonprofit world for the CFO is actually to get out and spend at least 25 to 30% of their time out in the operations areas so they can see what they're accomplishing. It's not just the bottom line, those numbers, putting those into the boxes, ensuring that those are accounted for, but also figuring out new ways to do things, new ways for them to go find funding, and being there for them. As you're aware, I mean, over the last 6 or 7 years, nonprofits are being looked at a lot closer. There's a lot of new rules. Sarbanes-Oxley is affecting nonprofits. Our tax return called a Form 990 has been changed tremendously. I mean, really, there are a lot more requirements on nonprofits than a lot of the smaller for-profits these days. But that information is what those donors are relying on to make sure that you are a well-run organization and those dollars are being used effectively. So, I mean, learning how to be a good steward of the money, but also being somebody that they can look you in the eye and understand that you believe strongly in what you're doing is vital these days.
So in that regard, you talked about the Form 990 and some of the regulation requirements. An organization that perhaps is achieving funding from some kind of a federal or local or city government entity in the translation of that to the government entity, to the 990, do you have to actually identify what you've got from different sources in terms of government entities versus private individuals and so forth?
You are required to do that now. You're also required to answer a lot of questions about due diligence. You know, are your board members involved in any ways that they should not be? I mean, you talk a lot about fraud. I mean, that's something that nonprofits have to look at every day, I mean, constantly. You're always reviewing your vendors to make sure that there's a separation of those services. And a lot of times you'll have a major board member who works for one of those organizations that you're dealing with, I mean, SunTrust or, I mean, Wells Fargo. The banks are a particularly large area in the Atlanta market. And what you got to do is ensure there's a separation there. But you've also got to state that in your 990 so that your donors can be aware that there is some connectivity there that comes into play. But, you know, means each year now your board members are required to sign off on a form that says that they have no, I mean, they're not receiving anything in return. So, I mean, and you've got to make sure that you look at that and ensure that it's been, that they are answering it, I mean, as honestly as possible, and then look at anything that could possibly look be looked at as a conflict of interest. Mm.
Interesting that you should mention that. Our guest last month was, one of our guests was Denny Beresford, and he talked a little bit about not only the FASB Standards Board, but more from a corporate board governance, and I think that's what you're describing. Is there perhaps a move away for the nonprofits from having that, the lawyer, the accountant, the banker being on the board? Is there more of a move to having other people in the local community involved?
I think you're now looking at organizations wanting a combination of those. You're always going to want those major players on the board because of their expertise. And a lot of times they donate that expertise for free. I mean, we've got quite a few for-profit companies that help us out with things that would cost a tremendous amount of money, but they've helped us to develop our website, do other things there that can be beneficial. So, but you're also wanting those people that have the passion, I mean, that can be there, be the volunteers. They're there to help out because, unfortunately, excuse me, a little bit of cold here. Unfortunately, you're seeing with the downturn in the market, we've had to cut staffing. I mean, most nonprofits in the Atlanta area have had to cut their budgets anywhere from 25% to 30%. Well, I mean, naturally, that's staffing. And what you're looking at now is that you're looking at more, trying to find more volunteers to come in and fill in those times of need. And some of those individuals will become board members and can help to provide that ongoing expertise where you'll see a lot more turnover in the people that work for the businesses. They'll stay 2 or 3 years and then have to rotate to something else or move on to another career path within their organization.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something that is very key to for-profits as well as non-profits, and that is within the workforce, the labor costs. I can only take an assumption. I don't have any statistical data, but labor costs for most companies are a very big portion of the cost structure of running the business. But I would imagine for a non-profit where the outside individual donor is very much looking at the bottom line, where the spend is being spent, where the cash is going, my sense would be that are compensation levels drastically lower? Is it more a case that you're bringing people into the organization for the passion rather than for the money?
Well, salaries have always been a little bit lower in the nonprofit world than they have the for-profit world. If I'd stayed with GE or North American Phillips, I'd be making a whole lot more, but I don't think I'd have the satisfaction I have nowadays when I go home at the end of the day. It is interesting that about 75% to 80% of all costs within nonprofits are related to staffing and benefits. Regretfully, during this downturn in the market, just like other organizations, we've had to look at reducing the benefits. I mean, a lot of nonprofits have moved away from the moved to HMOs versus PPOs and POSs. Now, fortunately, in the Atlanta market, HMO is basically the same as a PPO. But the retirement plans, the amount given by the organizations, have been reduced significantly over the last year and probably will stay down for the near future. I mean, normally that's what nonprofits gave, was better benefits to compensate for the salaries. Unfortunately, I mean, in this economy, you have to help your staff to understand that, unfortunately, this is what we have to do to ensure the success of this organization and our continue to work with the children that we work with. Mm-hmm. They complain just like anyone else does, but you'd be surprised you see most people stepping forward and spending more time at the club working more hours. I mean, there's always this comment out there that nonprofit people go home after 35 hours and never work weekends, but you'd be surprised. Most nonprofits, I think the average is about 60 hours, and you're on call 24 hours a day. And, I mean, you'll be seeing people go out in the middle of the night to help a child that's, I mean, been tossed out of their home or something like that. And, you know, you do this not because of the dollars, but because of what you believe in.
Wonderful. Wonderful. There's clearly a lot of satisfaction in working in that nonprofit area. Perhaps looking at more the core elements of the finance function, what is the key challenge for the CFO in that nonprofit today? What is your key challenge? Is it the aspects of funding that you have described, or is it something other than that?
It's actually a combination right now. Funding is a huge issue. I mean, most nonprofits are currently thinking that this downturn in the economy is not going to recover for them until probably about 2012. So not only are you looking at your current areas that you're getting funds from, but you're trying to ensure that you're on the primary list for your major donors. I mean, donors are becoming a lot more conservative in who they're giving to. They want to see the results. So you've got to be able to show them clearly that you're accomplishing your task that you're involved in, and that you're also running in that 85 to 90% going to your programs. So less and less is going for what the term in for-profit is overhead. In a lot of cases, your donors are no longer giving for overhead. So you've got to figure out more and more creative ways to keep your costs down and, I mean, do a lot more for the kids and for the, I mean, what your goal is as a nonprofit, but realize that you're not going to have those dollars for overhead. So you do a lot of systems, things that can benefit you, using volunteers, talking to the major universities, getting some of their brighter young people to come help with you and doing those sort of things.
You talked a little bit about those funds and not being able to allocate them to the overheads. I think we're getting into some brief discussion about restricted versus unrestricted funds and the donations and how they're given. Just from a broad scope, not necessarily talking about the organization that you are presenting with today, but over your career, have you found that the average donor is asking for that restricted fund? Or are they unaware of that?
10 years ago, I would say they were not aware of it. But with a lot of the articles and the concerns that have been raised over the last 10 years with nonprofits, the focus that Congress is putting on nonprofits, the donors are becoming more savvy. They're asking for financials. They're going to GuideStar, which is one of the locations that has all the 990s for the nonprofits out there. They want to see that you're actually accomplishing what you're supposed to be doing, and that the right allocation between your program costs and your overhead costs are in that 90 to 10. I mean, used to, organizations could get away with being a 50-50, 50% to program and 50% to overhead. Now, if you're below 75%, you're going to have a hard time getting funding. And so, I mean, really, the government's pushing a lot of organizations to where it would be a 90-10. So you've got to figure out better and more cost-effective ways to do things, but doing more for what you're there is for that mission.
Mm. And so I guess one of the benefits that we could potentially be seeing right now is that, unfortunately, with high unemployment rates, we have more people out of work. Are you seeing that more volunteers are coming through that that individual that is now out of work looking for work?
Well, I mean, that's one of the good things about organizations like Delaney is they're putting out information saying if you're out of work, try to find something you can do to keep yourself active. And it's very beneficial that we're seeing a trend. These people are starting to say, can they help the Red Cross? Can they help other organizations? And it keeps them active. It allows them to do things. but also gives them opportunity to go looking for jobs at the same time. So you are seeing an increase in the number of people that are saying, well, if I'm going to be out of work, then why can't I do something for the good of the other people that are having troubles worse than I can? And it also gives them ability to see that somebody is worse off than them. And that's sometimes you have a tendency to get into that, well, gee, I'm feeling sorry for myself. But then you go out and see somebody that's got a child that's ill or has no income at all, and it really gets you to say, well, you know, I'm actually in a lot better shape than I think.
Well, that being said, let's talk a little bit more about your specific organization. Boys and Girls Club, you're obviously of Metro Atlanta area. Tell us about some of the programs that you have in place today.
Well, the Boys and Girls Club tries to focus on education, sports, and health as their primary things. And they mean there is a national headquarters located in Atlanta. Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta is located in 11 counties around the metro area and handles about 17,000 kids over a year period of time. What we do is starting at 2:30 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, our clubs open up, and we put on programs, but we also have sports activities. So we try to make a combination of things and make them interesting. We have computer labs, which a lot of the kids that we deal with don't have at home. They don't have computers. And it gives them ability to do their homework, and we bring in teachers to work with them on an ongoing basis. And what happens is you're going to see that the graduation rate increases significantly for boys and girls clubs versus what they would be in the Atlanta area. And I'm not saying anything bad about our teachers. They have a lot of hard work going on. But we can focus more on specific kids and help them out in those areas. But creating those things where they have those sports activities they want to be involved in, too, it's kind of placing the apple in front of them. It's, okay, well, I mean, you're going to spend an hour in the computer lab. These items here, we bring in teachers on math, education type items. But we also teach things such as great, health items. We provide food and that a lot of times they don't get when they go home. And what we try to do is get them to see that they're important and that they have opportunities. And we bring in a lot of people from organizations such as the Braves, from, people that are in the singing field, that have come up in the Boys and Girls Club to talk to them and say, you have this opportunity too. And I think that helps them to realize that, okay, things may be bad, but you're going to be given an opportunity here.
So if we have any listeners that might like to become involved, let's give the organization a plug, say the name again, and perhaps give us the website.
Yeah, it's Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta. It's www.bgcma.org. It's a great organization, and they're needing a tremendous help now. But when you come out with those clubs and see 300 or 400 children between the ages of 6 and 18 and then start learning about their backgrounds and the things that they have to deal with, on average, our children's families are 200% below the poverty level. 200% below the poverty level. And, this is an opportunity for people to help people that, have things a lot worse than we can ever think of.
And so any of our listeners, if you would like to go to that website, please feel free to do so. And part of the reason that we're having nonprofits on the show is so that we can actually do a little bit of good for our community. And we will use these opportunities to give the plug. So there we go. Now, talking back a little bit more in terms of the core finance role, you talked a little bit about teaching the youth of today computers and technology and information systems. Let's talk a little bit about that in terms of your role. Information systems and the analytics that you mentioned from earlier in your career. How talk about the information systems as it relates to your organizations.
Information systems are becoming a huge part of the small nonprofits. I mean, nowadays there's a lot of major software products out there that can do a lot of the work for the organizations, but they also put it in styles that are English. I mean, if I start talking about, a balance sheet or, a statement of financial position and those things, people start, you see their eyes start rolling back in their head. What the systems do now is you can have integrated systems which bring in HR, bring in risk management, bring in the finance, bring in all those things. We actually track our kids, I mean, where they're at, you know, who's attending, those sort of things there. And play our volunteers we track also, that we, and we can have all this information that can tell us what is going on in the clubs, but also gets it to flow through that when we do these financial reports, we can provide that information to our donors too. And with this combination of information and getting it put out in English quickly, it allows us to be a lot more cost effective for the organization and to help the organization achieve that next level without adding additional staff.
So it's all about, again, the core element of gathering the data, making sure that you can assimilate it, as you've said, in English, which helps the reader at the other end. And obviously for you in a nonprofit world, you have volunteer activities. For lack of a better term, they might be employees that aren't paid.
That's correct. I mean, currently we have 28 locations, and each one has an executive director, and they actually run their own financial reports now, but they're in a style that they can read instantly, and they can start seeing, is there a trend? And, you know, we've had to do some teaching to get them there, but that means to see the light bulb come on. And in some cases, I've actually seen the executive directors taking these and using these reports when they're talking to some of the teenagers to show them, here's how a business is run.
That's
fabulous.
So
it's interesting to see how things are the light bulbs going on for both people that work for you, but also for kids to show them, you know, this is what makes a business tick.
That's great. That really is. Rubber hits the road. Now, in that regard, information systems often tend to focus on the rear view of a company's history. Talk a little bit about the forward-looking, the forecasting, and how that is perhaps not only different but challenged in regards to that donor, that government grant. Commitments can be dropped at a heartbeat. It's not like a customer that perhaps has a legal contract if the donor is no longer able to give at that level. Talk a little bit about forecasting and the challenges you have.
Well, I mean a lot of nonprofits are trying to do this. They just have a strategic plan that goes out at least 5 to 10 years. And what they start to do at that point in time is they start to identify those major donors that have historically given to the organization, and they hope to continue. As you point out, a donor can just change their mind for a multitude of different reasons on whether to give dollars. In some cases, we have dollars that we get on an annual basis, but if we were to start doing something that that group thought was inappropriate, if there are any fraud items that come into play, those sort of things there, they could stop the funding. In that case there, but what you mean, even similar to a nonprofit, you have to take a look and see what are the trends, mean which organizations are giving to this type of organization, what opportunities do you have. Internet-based items, I mean, Facebook, those sort of things are the new trend in nonprofits. I mean, over the last 2 years, Boys and Girls Club Metro Atlanta has developed their website significantly, and in our first year, we cleared over $50,000 in internet donations. And that's where people, that's the new world. As we see, some of us old timers are wishing it was, we'd go back to things where it was before. But, you know, the new age relies on information, relies on being able to instantly see you. They're not picking up a newspaper. They're going to internet to see what's going on. And so we start looking at the opportunities there. For profits, just like they're going to the government for funding, we're looking at more at government funding. There's a lot of funds out there. As long as we use them specifically for the programmatic side, that our government wants to see these benefits getting to people with the lower incomes. And so we're starting to focus more on those. But that requires a lot of information and reporting and ensuring that we meet the guidelines there. So you've got to be able to get that data back and get it back in a timely manner and also give them financials that show that you're accomplishing your task.
So to that extent, do you now have Facebook funding, Twitter funding, and apologies for all those other websites that we haven't mentioned?
We do have Facebook, and we're looking at Twitter as we speak, and that's going to be activated probably within the next year to where we can do that type of item too. And we know these are not large dollars, but when you talk about the number of people, that can become significant organizations such as ourselves. And, you know, realize that the Boys and Girls Clubs of Metro Atlanta only charge the child $35 for a year of service. And that $35 is more to have them feel like they're a part of what's going on instead. I mean, we can actually just, scholarship them instead. But, dollars we get from there could cover just one membership for one child. And we could link them to that person. We're starting to look at more opportunities for these conversations to go back and forth with blogs and those sort of things there. So there's opportunities here to have people that, have the capability to give money to talk directly to a child and follow that child's history and see what's going on.
That's interesting. You don't get that view of the average customer. So in a new world, probably you're getting a new demographic of customer as well, of funding.
It's starting to change. Used to be it was more foundations. Now it's going back to being more individuals and more government funding. I mean, United Way was, we were one of United Way of Atlanta's, the largest groups they're giving to, but because of the cutbacks they've been seeing, we had a 15% reduction last year, and they're talking about another reduction this year. It's not their fault, but it's just the fact that dollars are not coming in as quickly, and the organizations, the corporate companies are leaving Atlanta, and we've lost some major ones, which were major donors. So it's finding those new corporations and getting them to have their people give directly through payroll deduction.
Understand. Some of our listeners may be interested in making the transition over to the nonprofit world. They perhaps work in the finance role, whether as a CFO or perhaps one of the staff members underneath. Do you have any particular suggestions on what they should consider in making that leap?
One, you have to be sure that you want to do it not for the dollars, because you want to do something that in the day when you go home, you can say, yeah, I did that for that child. But I would suggest strongly that you try volunteering. I mean, there's a huge amount of nonprofits in the Atlanta area and across the United States that need financial expertise. And, I mean, try volunteering to do their financials, to be their volunteer finance manager for a period of time. Even helping at your church, you start seeing the type of accounting it is. It's a lot different from it is in the for-profit world, but the bottom line would be similar is you've got payroll, accounts payable, receivables, those sort of things are in place. But getting that where you have that experience that you've worked with a nonprofit and you talk the language, if you don't talk that language, they look at you like, okay, where are you coming from? But you'd be surprised how quickly you start learning things and can actually become a part of a small organization and eventually apply for a job in a large organization. So I think there are opportunities now because the government's looking at us more closely that for-profit CFOs can transition over, but it's got to be that you really believe in the mission.
And in that regard, do you think that if they gave themselves the opportunity to have that, what might be temporary opportunity, taking that experiences back to the for-profit world, do you think that there's a learning that could be gained?
Considering some of my fellow friends out there, CFOs in the for-profit world, yeah, I think it is, because in the nonprofit world, you're not doing it for your own good. I mean, you're not doing it to make a profit for a shareholder. You're doing it because you're trying to accomplish something that benefits people. And I think taking it back to the for-profit world, to where you benefit your employees, you benefit even the people that buy your product, I think you could see a tremendous change in how things are run these days.
Taking it back to the world of widgets, interestingly enough, as you're describing your experiences and the passion, clearly we all try to work with companies with whom we have that passion. But looking back to my career, one of the companies was a rolled steel products company. I can't imagine trying to determine what rolled steel products I bought in my life and to have that affinity with the company, or it might have been a payment processor. We have three of the largest in the world, actually here in Atlanta. I can't imagine going to my family and saying, we're not going to use these credit card processors. Stop using that credit card. I mean, it's not the same thing.
It's definitely not. But I think if you did take that back to a for-profit company, what you would see, especially if you started setting up programs for your staff, could mean volunteer for things, is you start seeing them saying, well, gee, look what my company's doing. They're making a difference. And what you're going to see in a lot of cases, which I see with the people I work with, is it doesn't become a 35 to 40-hour work week. It becomes, you know, what do I do that would make things better for somebody? And I think even in the for-profit world, I mean, you see companies like Microsoft giving back as much, and their people work tremendous hours.
So we have a wrap-up tradition on the show to ask our CFOs, what is your CFO tip of the month?
I thought about that for a while and trying to figure out. I mean, I think mine would be is teamwork. I mean, don't try to be in a silo. I mean, a good CFO has to be out there, has to be working in operations with human resources, with the IT staff. Is the more you work with your staff and with your senior management, the better organization you'll have overall. And when issues do crop up, then you'll have a team there that can immediately sit down, deal with that issue and move forward.
Thank you very much. That's a terrific tip. And we would like to thank Jeff Quessenberry, our guest today, for sharing his most innermost thoughts of the role of the CFO. Thank you also to our contributor, CFO Magazine. And thank you to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies as well as small businesses. For more information about Delaney, go to www.delaneyllc.com. And thanks also goes to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small and medium-sized companies. For more information on their product, go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO and would like to be on the show, please contact us via the web. And thank you to our guests for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.